for the morning, the United States versus Thompson. Mr. Tice.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Bill Tice. Carol Brook and I represent Mark Thompson. I'm going to address the court first on the sufficiency of the evidence, and then Ms. Brook is going to speak to you about sentencing. This is a case about junk science. The conviction in this case rests in any meaningful sense on the opinion of someone who was presented as an expert. And the expert in this case rendered an opinion. She stated that it was arson. However, she did not give a legitimate basis for her opinion. And a big part of that was that she herself recognized that you had to do scientific testing. She took debris from the basement, sent it off for scientific testing to see whether, in fact, consistent with her initial theorization, accelerants were used. And that's the only way you can determine that, is by examining the debris with these chemical tests. She never got any results back. She never asked about any results. To this day, we know nothing about the results. And so the government is asking the court to do something that this court has never done before, and that is to affirm an arson conviction where the basis of the conviction is scientific testing or scientific opinion, but there is no testing. Now, you've affirmed other cases in which the defendant confesses. That's an easy one. You've affirmed cases in which someone sees the defendant setting the fire. That's another easy one. You've affirmed cases where the defendant talks to someone about possibly doing the arson. So now we're getting to slimmer evidence, but still a reasonable decision on this court to affirm. You've also got a case where in the debris were found cans of gasoline with electrical wires connected to them. That, I think, is also a pretty easy one for concluding that there was arson. But here, what we have is a fire in a basement with a lot of stuff in the basement, and the expert says, I detected burning that was pretty much at floor level, and it's my theory that someone must have put something on the floor and set it a fire, some accelerant.
So are we to ignore all the circumstantial evidence in this case where the neighbor said he left around 7, not 6:15, his money problems, the increase in the insurance policy, his admission of bankruptcy fraud, you know, the problems with the, don't do a codicil to the will saying don't do an autopsy when the lawyer didn't know anything about it? I mean, couldn't a jury... I can give you that point that she didn't get the testing, and clearly she could have done more. But doesn't the jury have enough basis with all that evidence?
I would say not. And really, it's what the government presented was a series of red herrings. And I don't know if I've got enough time to go through each and every one of them. I tried to in the briefs, but let me try to honestly take what seemed to be the biggest red herrings, the money problems. You know, there are tens of thousands of people in this country who have a negative net worth. If we say money problems shows you're the arsonist, these people are in trouble, and we would submit that there's a first step. Was there arson? And that's where we need some evidence other than money problems. If we had a basis, if the jury had a basis to find that there was an arson, then the money problems would point to Mr. Thompson as the arsonist, but we don't get there. We also would strongly suggest to the court that the court and the jury should have done this too, taken into account the very specific theory that the government had. They had this theory that Mr. Thompson did the arson, and he did it in such a way that it would look like an arson. Now, most people would say, well, isn't that crazy? But then they went on and they said, It's our theory that Mr. Thompson did it in such a way that it looked like an arson committed by his mother. And there, the government's proof is really lacking. You know, they elicited some testimony that if he had committed the arson, Mr. Thompson, there'd be no coverage. They submitted something to the jury that they called the policy, which was really some endorsements and some correspondence. But they never once submitted to the jury the actual policy, which would have answered a very important question. Namely, if the mother had set the fire, would there be coverage? Because if there wouldn't have been any coverage, what happens to the government's theory at that point? And the interesting thing is that although the government pre-marked as Exhibit 41 the actual policy with all the language, they never submitted that to the jury. If you take a look at that policy, you will see that an arson committed by the mother, a fire set intentionally by the mother, would have voided the policy. Now, bear in mind, it was always the government's theory that Mr. Thompson was this very cagey person who was very knowledgeable about insurance, and he built his life around insurance. He was going to get himself out of this financial fix with insurance. So it's going to be kind of hard for them to say, oh, he didn't look at the policy. And certainly the government looked at the policy and chose not to submit it. So now Your Honors has got this case with this very weak circumstantial evidence as to identity and really no evidence as to arson, save for this unsupported opinion of the expert. And the most important part of the puzzle is missing. It's not there.
Was this initially ruled a suicide by someone?
The medical examiner ruled it a suicide.
Well, and ultimately that had to be changed, especially if they paid. I didn't understand. They paid a bunch of insurance, too, didn't they?
The insurance company paid out. And
it wouldn't have if there had been.
Under the policy, the insurance company would have had no obligation to pay if the mother had committed suicide by arson.
Who determined that it wasn't suicide and it was obviously, I guess, either accidental death or murder?
Well, the insurance company didn't, and the medical examiner didn't, but the government presented this case to the jury without the full insurance policy, and a jury came along and entered a verdict of guilty. And we're fully aware that guilty verdicts.
I'm going back to the insurance company. Maybe you don't even know this. If it was at first ruled a suicide, and it's in the insurance policy, suicide is an exclusion, and the insurance company paid, something had to change between the first determination and the payment.
I don't know
okay.
what that
if
is.
You don't know, I don't know either.
Apparently,
like we don't know what the insurance policy says because it isn't in the record, I guess.
Well, we know what the insurance policy says, although unfortunately it's not in the record. And we don't know the insurance company's thought processes. You would think that before they pay out $800,000 or so, they're going to figure out if they've got a defense. I see that my time is up, and I know Ms. Brooke has got some important issues to answer for you, so I'm going to sit down for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Brooke.
Judge Flom, Judge Mannion, Judge Williams. Because our client was sentenced for murder, never charged, I need to ask this court to reconsider, to the extent that they say is contrary to what I'm going to argue this morning, to reconsider the theory that this court applied in that case. And the reason that I need to ask you to reconsider is because the facts of this case are the very facts that the Supreme Court in Blakely wrote Blakely to prevent. What they said in Blakely was this: it cannot be in our country that a person can be sentenced for murder if they were only convicted of possessing the murder weapon. Yet that is what happened here. Let's look at the indictment. Did the indictment charge murder? There's three reasons why it didn't. The first is the actions of the government. They immediately submitted, after Blakely, sentencing allegations to go to the jury, one of which, the first of which, said, do you, the jury, believe that Mr. Thompson knowingly and willfully committed murder of his mother? Those words are not in the indictment anywhere. Now, the government withdrew that after Booker, although there's nothing in Booker that changes the meaning of Apprendi or Blakely. The second reason is that if we turn the tables, say the government today indicted my client for first-degree murder, and I came before Your Honors and said, Your Honors, this is double jeopardy. You cannot allow this indictment for first-degree murder because he's already been convicted and sentenced for first-degree murder. You would say, I know you would say, because you'd be right, there's no double jeopardy here. If we look at this first indictment, nothing in it charges the elements of murder. So there could be a new indictment on that. The third reason is if you look to see the judge below properly instructed the jury to say, ladies and gentlemen, you only need to find one act in the wire fraud counts unanimously. We have no idea which of those acts in the wire fraud counts the jury agreed upon. Both the judge and the government say that doesn't matter. They had to have found that he murdered his mother. But they didn't have to find that. That's a speculation. That's maybe legitimate guesswork, but it is not what Blakely and Apprendi require. I have one more point, and I'll sit down.
You may continue, Ms. Brooke.
My final point is this. What the judge did was go to the guidelines and decide that instead of a 19-year sentence here, she would give the 190-year sentence that the guideline cross-reference to an uncharged murder requires. And then to get there, she would, and did, rotely put the maximum sentence on every count and then make them consecutive. Both Apprendi and Blakely say clearly the court needs to look at the specific facts found by the jury in the count of conviction at issue. That was never done here. And that is my argument as to why this court needs to reconsider its views in Bessay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brooke. Mr. Lang.
May it please the court. My name is Patrick Lang. I represent the appellee, the United States. In this case, Your Honors, the government had overwhelming evidence to prove that the fire was intentionally set by Mr. Thompson. It was proved by evidence at the scene. It was proved by the behavior of Mr. Thompson before the fire, during the fire, and after the fire. The scene itself showed, first of all, that it was staged to look like an arson. The solvent cans were placed right next to the body. These are solvent cans that were taken. There's another shelf of solvent cans in the basement. These solvent cans were placed right next to Ms. Carmen Thompson's body. Her body was placed right at the origin of the fire. Matches were placed in her room. Mark Thompson told anybody who listened that his mom was suicidal and that she wanted to burn the house down and commit suicide. The expert testimony at trial was not junk science. It was based on burn patterns. They were low and uniform along the floor, which is evidence of an accelerant being used. There was high flame into the ceiling joist, which is evidence of an accelerant being used.
But there's pretty standard procedure in an arson that you take residue from the scene and try to tie that, if you can, to some of the flammables that were there. And she never got the test results. Did it ever come out why?
It came out in the record that the substances that were taken for testing were turned over to the police. And because she's with the fire department, she did not get those materials. But the testing judge would basically prove one thing.
So did the police department do the test?
It's not in the record, but the police department did do a test. The testing, as far as I know, was negative for the materials they took. That was discovered. I mean, that was sent over in discovery. That was in the possession of the defense. It was not placed in the record in the case. And the reason, I think, judges, is what a testing would show, if you took and if you look at the cases that are cited by the defense, is what they're really looking for is the presence of accelerants. Mm-hmm. And we had that here. We had right next to the body the presence of two cans of accelerants. We had the firefighters smelling accelerants. So the testing really wouldn't add anything. As I mentioned, the high flame is more evidence of an accelerant being used. And, you know, one of the arguments that was made in the briefs was, well, there was maybe something higher up fell down, and that's what caused a little burning. What happened in this fire is it was a very localized fire and a very short duration fire. And actually, the firefighters actually saw where the origin was. They actually saw where the fire was burning. So this is one that was not hard to assess. If fire had started higher and dropped down, you would have had more damage in the second floor, and there wasn't. There was just some smoke damage. There was no fire starting high up and dropping down. I think it's mentioned in the brief that maybe it was this PVC pipe that burned, liquefied, and made this low burn. Again, there was nothing there that would cause a fire to start there, and that's another major point that the expert made, which was the elimination of accidental causes. Eliminated a light switch that was nearby because it was in very good condition. Eliminated a furnace that was behind that wasn't even involved in the fire. There was no other electrical causes, no other accidental causes. And this, again, leads to a very reliable conclusion that accelerant was used. Now, not only, of course, do we have the scene evidence, we have really the manifest evidence of what Mr. Thompson did prior to the fire. We went into his expensive lifestyle and how he had a financial descent and basically started scrambling for money. And this goes to, I think, the question about insurance. He had a sham burglary that he perpetrated in 2000 that was proved at court, that he said things were stolen from his house and then he got $50,000 for that loss. And part of that, and it's in the record, he had to sign basically a proof of loss that said he had nothing to do with it. He saw how Chubb Insurance operated. And I think this was goes to the nub of this question about we didn't prove what was in the insurance policy. First of all, we did provide insurance policies in the record, not every single page of the insurance policy. But what we showed was Mr. Thompson's intent. He saw how he could get money very easily from Chubb because that was the way they operated. They paid. You paid a high premium. You got your claims paid in an expeditious fashion. And that's what happened in 2000, basically without any investigation whatsoever. And he had to basically promise he didn't have anything to do with it. So to argue that somehow he would believe that a third party's acts wouldn't be paid by Chubb, I think it's just rank speculation.
So can you move to this sentencing
yes.
issue and this stacking? I mean, do you think, I mean, the sentence under the guideline, well, would have been 19 years without the cross-reference. Now we have a sentence of 190 years because of consecutive sentencing. Do you think there should be any limits on the government's ability to introduce uncharged conduct at the sentencing phase?
Should there be any limits? I suppose there should be reasonable limits, yes. But in this case, it was a very reasonable sentence because he was sentenced on what he was convicted of. And we constantly heard in the brief or read in the brief, it's uncharged, unproven conduct, and that's just not the case here. It was charged as a central, as the essence of the insurance fraud. It's a nine-paragraph description. Three of them, the central parts, talk about the staging of the fire, setting of the fire, the staging of it by looking like his mom did it, and then filing the false claim. That was the heart of it. That's how it was argued. That's how it was defended. It was what the judge found in sentencing. I mean, it's one of these deals, Judge, where this is not the tail wagging the dog. This is not some drug amount that is now being added on to a drug case. This is what the case was about. If we don't prove that he set that fire and killed his mother, we don't win. We lose. And the judge recognized that at the district court level. So should there be limits? I think, obviously, reasonable limits. These are well within those limits. It's a very harsh sentence for a very harsh crime.
Is there a similar fact pattern in federal prosecution to this case? either in the district or whatever. I mean, it's interesting. The evidence went to the police. I assume that's the Chicago police.
Right.
I don't know whether it was a declination by the state prosecutor, but if the thrust of this sentence, which is the murder, I mean, the arson is built into the sentence, but the enormity of the sentence is murder. Are we aware of why this was? I mean, it's not our call to question where the executive goes with the prosecution, but is this a case where there's a declination?
What happened was very little investigation was done because the way we looked at it was he almost got away with it. He was successful staging this as a suicide. And what happened is there was the bomb and arson of the Chicago Fire Police Department, and I believe that the detectives basically went in, took a cursory look, talked to Mark Thompson, heard that his mom was acting psychotically, and closed the case literally, not officially, but literally closed the investigation that day within a couple hours. The ME took their basically reports and put in that she had committed suicide. So when we looked at it, Judge, we saw that there was something very fishy here, but they had not really been adequately investigated, and then we began our investigation.
Thank you.
If there's any other questions, I would ask that the convictions be affirmed as well as the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Guys.
Actually, this morning, about 10 minutes ago, was the first time that I heard that the test reports came back negative. Now, supposedly that was in the discovery. I never saw it. But here's the important point. The government presented a witness who talked about test results and never elicited any testimony about what those results were or any efforts to get those results. And
we came out in her cross.
No, Your Honor.
That she did not.
All that came out from the total of the direct and the cross was that she sent this off to get results. There was never any question by either side, did you get results? Did you ask about results? And now we know the results are negative. This woman gave an opinion that this was an intentional fire, started with an accelerant, and the test results came back that in the debris, no accelerant. That's what the government is telling us this morning. Now, couple that with the fact that they didn't submit the whole insurance policy. And, you know, they sort of poo-poo the idea that they don't have to submit the whole insurance policy. But wait a second. They had a very unique theory made to look like the mother's arson. And the one thing that the jury never heard about was that if the mother had done the arson, there would have been no recovery under the policy.
Well, was that part of the policy offered on behalf of the defense, the rest of the policy, or was there an argument made that that was misleading and therefore under the rule of completeness the whole thing should have been admitted?
The defense said nothing about what was offered by the government. The defense made no effort to introduce the entire policy. The defense did not raise any questions as to the exclusions.
So, and was it argued by the defense then in closing argument about the missing part of the? I assume there was no argument then, no closing argument.
There was none, Your Honor. And so we've got this record with these two big holes. Now one other thing.
So
you know,
isn't that a problem for you though on appeal in terms of the standard of review, because we're talking plain error here.
Well, we're.
I mean, on both points. Well, certainly on that point. The other point in terms of you're just learning about the test results, and we're talking Brady, potential Brady violation.
I would say that at this point we're talking about whether the evidence is sufficient. And these are pieces of evidence that are not in the record. And if they're not in the record, then the evidence is insufficient. Because there was a motion made for judgment of acquittal. So the The issue of is the evidence sufficient, one that is not subject to plain error analysis. And it's either there or it's not there, and that's the government's problem. It's not our problem. Now, the government makes it sound like Mr. Thompson had managed to hoodwink everybody at the scene of the crime, and they rode up on their white horse and solved all the problems. The medical examiners testified, and by no means did they ever say, oh, yeah, we decided it was a suicide because her son told us that she had some suicidal ideations. There was nothing like that. As a matter of fact, according to their expert, she thought it was an arson from the get-go. So what did she do? She sends off her test results, and what happens? And I don't know that she ever saw them, but we know from what the government told us this morning that they were negative, and yet somehow that was never presented to the...
That's a little troubling to me. So that I understand it, and for my colleagues. Sir Tice, it's your understanding that you were, or the defense, never were in receipt of what Mr. Lange represents the government gave by way of discovery with regard to the test?
Well, at the risk of stating the obvious, we did not try the case.
Okay. No, I
understand.
I appreciate
it. And once we got the case, in preparing the appeal, we sorted through boxes that the government had presented to prior counsel. Now, to this day, we don't know for a fact that we got everything from prior counsel. But we went through those boxes. And I can tell you that if I had seen a report of negative results, that would have set off big lights and whistles and bells. And you see, I'm not even making any complaint that, you know, they didn't turn this over or we didn't know it before. That's, you know, that's sort of the stuff that you judges have heard on motion call when the civil lawyers are talking about discovery. The real point is the results. The result is negative. And that's what's not in the record. And they're asking you to affirm a conviction when they know, and they even told the court, it's not me telling the court because I didn't know about it, they told the court the results were negative for accelerants. What does that do to their expert opinion? If it was weak before, and we submit it was weak before, it is meaningless now.
Now, on this, on the remainder of the policy that you said was not offered by the defense, I mean, I understand your argument is the question is sufficiency of the evidence. But did you find in your search of the files that the remainder of the policy was there? Because you were using that as an argument to show that there that the defense theory could have been supported.
It
and
is
so
in our...
That, and, but that wasn't argued, so that...
Your Honor, what we received was a set of all the government's exhibits because they pre-marked them. And some of them were actually offered and admitted, and some were never offered. So we have in our file, and I saw it a long time ago, Government Exhibit 41, which was never offered, and the government's never denied, nor could they, that this was the policy that they had pre-marked. And when you look at that policy, which they never offered, there's a specific exclusion. First of all, there's a definition, to sort of harken back to a case a couple earlier this morning, of who is considered to be covered by the policy. And they have definitions. And anyone in the family is considered to be an insured. Anyone in the family who lives in the house, that's clearly common Thompson. And then they've got an exclusion, and they say, if you, meaning you or any member of the family, intentionally create a loss, no coverage.
Thank you, Mr. Tice.
Thank you.
Ms. Brook, thank you. Mr. Lange, thank you. And the case will be taken under advisement.